The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
What do you think they need to do for their fans to suggest, all right, this is a different direction, but still appeal to the fans?
Yeah, good challenge, right? I mean, they're going to have to believe. But for the first time in forever, you're trying to sell hope.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined to start the new year by someone you're going to hear often on this podcast. I'm very excited as we start launching some of the new things we have planned for 2025. It is, of course, the guy we know as Instant Offense. Do you still go by that, Jeff?
You're a little older, so maybe not so instant, you know, like, okay. You know, maybe not quite microwave instant, but, you know, quick heat instant, toaster oven instant.
That is, of course, columnist at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com, Jeff Gordon. Gordo, who you've known for years and read for years, hockey beat, baseball beat, columnist galore, tip sheet for STLtoday.com. And I've known since my days at Mizzou, though he probably doesn't remember that much.
Well, it was a you've had an interesting run. And now you're an old timer here at the PD. Not as old as me.
No. Well, happy New Year, Jeff. You're going to be a regular here on the best podcast in baseball. We're also going to do some video components, which you're hosting, and will appear on STLtoday.com. And while there's plenty going on with the Cardinals, and we'll get into that, 'tis the season of Cooperstown, and the ballots are due. They got to be postmarked by December 31st. I usually host a chat or do a podcast, that reveals my Hall of Fame ballot. And I thought, you know, this would be a good chance to kind of have you cross-examine my ballot. You know, we can kick this off, welcome you to the best podcast in baseball, and you can just get right to the hard stuff and hold me accountable.
Yeah, you've got some interesting choices this year because of the influx of newcomers, a very impressive group, mm-hmm. and some really worthy guys, particularly Billy Wagner, who have been holding on from previous elections. So a really interesting class, and it's good to see the ball riders getting more guys in the hall. It's been an interesting time for baseball, an interesting interesting flow of candidates for the hall. But things are flowing, and I'm very optimistic that we'll have a very good group going into Cooperstown this year.
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to be one of the highest attended inductions if the weather is nice there in Cooperstown. We know that because, of course, the headliner who's new to the ballot is Ichiro. And like many people, I raced to the ballot to put an X by his name and join the chorus of acclamation that puts him into Cooperstown in the National Baseball Hall of Fame. There's really no other way to put it. He's got a chance to be the first position player who gets 100% of the vote. We'll see how that goes. I hope that people won't game the ballot, meaning that they have to use their 10 spots to try to keep someone else on. And so they will not use a spot for Ichiro, knowing that he's going to get the high number of votes, and you can use that spot on the ballot for someone else. I hope they don't. I hope it isn't, you know, a unanimous selection. You're talking about a guy who had nearly 4,400 hits in his professional career, more than 3,000 in the major leagues, just a Hall of Famer by definition. You know, when you look at the last year's ballot, obviously had some folks come off. They were inducted in the Hall of Fame, Joe Mauer, Todd Helton, a group there, another person who I voted for rather consistently. I think I voted for him every year. Gary Sheffield is no longer on the ballot. He ran out of time, so he is now going to reach the Veterans Committee, where I hope he gets elected and eventually gets inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. I had five holdovers, Jeff, and I'll read them to you here. It's Bobby Abreu, Carlos Beltran, former Cardinal, Andrew Jones, center fielder, obviously, for Atlanta, Chase Utley, the Philadelphia Phillies, remarkable second baseman, and somebody who I saw play way long ago when I covered LSU and UCLA, and Chase Utley came into town for Super Regional. And then, of course, the reliever who you mentioned, Billy Wagner. So that's the five that I had hold over. I did vote for all five, Abreu, Beltran, Andrew Jones, Chase Utley, and Billy Wagner. To that group, I added Ichiro, of course. I also added CeCe Sabathia, Andy Pettit, local product, Mark Burley, and Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners. So it is the five guys coming back, Ichiro, and then four starting pitchers. And you can kind of see a theme there to my ballot. But I did vote for all – I did use all 10 spots. I did not a year ago. This year I did. I try to use comparative standards. Like if I vote for this person, does that open the door for this person? Where do I draw the line after or before a player? Unfortunately, it is a difficult part of the ballot, and it's a difficult part of the Hall of Fame. Somebody is going to be left at the doorstep. There is going to be somebody you vote for induction, and there is going to be somebody you don't vote for who has to pay for admission. And that is that's a tough line to draw, and I try to find it, and I try to remain consistent with it.
Yeah, there's an interesting debate always. You know, go back in the old school guys. The counting numbers were so important forever and ever.
Right.
And that still is a factor. I think for counting numbers, if a guy is a good player late in his career and is helping a team win, and he's defying age by doing so, that while not dominating as a dominating performance is certainly a hall worthy performance late in a career. If you're contributing and if you're outperforming your demographic and adding success to your team. And that there's been a lot of guys that fall into that category. Increasingly, there's been more focus, and rightfully so, on players who dominated during their time and were, you know, maybe for a shorter period, but were better at producing, you know, wins above replacement and such. So to me, there's always been that push and pull between the old way of thinking, like if a guy reaches a certain milestone of numbers, victories, for instance, for a pitcher, which is a stat that's no longer as nearly as relevant, then that would be the yardstick. So as a voter, you've got a whole lot more that you're weighing than your predecessors going back, you know, to say 20, 30 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you bring up counting numbers. So this can kind of maybe launch the conversation, because, you know, one of the questions I get a lot about is Bobby Abreu. And I've voted for him consistently. I don't know. I'd have to look back, but I voted him for every year, certainly since his second year on the ballot, and maybe every year since he got on the ballot. And, you know, it also kind of works into the conversation about starting pitchers with counting numbers. Like, what counting numbers do we look at when we're talking about something that has radically changed in the game? The 300 game winner gone, you know, does that become 250? Does that become 200 wins? What becomes the standard? Felix Hernandez is more than two seasons off of 200 wins. John Lester and Adam Wainwright are fast approaching with 200 wins in their career. How do we look at those counting numbers? When it comes to Bobby Abreu, one of the things that's interesting about, like, looking at his comparables, right, is Tony Gwynn. And I know that may come as a shock. I know that may be like people are like, well, how could you say that? Well, you know, if you look at the counting numbers, Jeff, Tony Gwynn had 3,100 hits, 3,000 hits, just like Ichiro. And 3,000 hits is a golden ticket to Cooperstown, right? That's just like one of those standards. But do you know who got on base more than Tony Gwynn? Just straight up on base. Bobby Abreu. He got on base more often than Tony Gwynn. He had 700 fewer hits, right? But he got on base more. And you might go, well, he played more games. I mean, he didn't. He played fewer games. He played fewer games and made fewer outs. And when we look at trying to get the kind of kaleidoscope of a player's career and line it up, and we start looking at the new numbers, like the numbers that like we have new, either newly available or a new view of or a better view of. I mean, look, Tony Gwynn, tremendous player. No one's taken away from him. I'm only adding to it that like Bobby Abreu just trails him in batting average. You know, it's 338 Tony Gwynn to 291 Bobby Abreu. But Bobby Abreu had a higher on-base percentage. Bobby Abreu had a higher slugging. Bobby Abreu had a higher OPS. Bobby Abreu had 920 extra base hits and 400 stolen bases. You know, and folks will go, well, you know, He was only a two-time All-Star. Fair. He was only a two-time All-Star. He was a zero-time league leader in average, zero-time leader in on-base percentage, zero-time leader in slugging. That's all fair. Didn't really get a whole lot of run as MVP, though I think in the modern voting, he would have had at least one top three finish when we look at kind of the wins above replacement, OPS, OPS plus, all those things that now modern voters look at. But what he did do was just about everything well except for get noticed. And that's pretty good Hall of Fame career. So do we need to start looking at starting pitchers differently too then, Jeff? How do you look at that as it changes?
Right, because wins, the way the game is, the use of relief pitching, it's a whole different world. I got emotional about a guy just who's I grew up watching, not really grew up, but watched more as a young adult, was Jack Morris, in the sense of he's a guy that stayed in games, pitched in a league where there was a DH at the time, won big games, did not come out of games, gave up runs because of that, did not have a great ERA, but he did pitch a long time. He did build up some counting numbers, and he did have some postseason success, which is another X factor. Is that a plus, a value added, or is that a necessity for the Hall? Obviously not a necessity, because there's some players who did not have much postseason success who got in. But I look at a guy like that, and people compared his efficiency, which was not very, versus his impact on the game, which was great. So you'd have a pitcher who has a great impact on the game, maybe not the most efficient guy, for whatever reason, in Morris's case, and maybe environment and stubbornness not coming out of games and such. So, I looked at more of an intangible for him as a candidate over the years versus, again, I appreciate the efficiency numbers that people are looking for, fielding independent statistics, looking at, was this, just the quality of the work that maybe didn't result in a W. Or just a really gaudy total, and a strikeout total even. So, it is fascinating. What are you looking at? And there's so many things to look at. Derek, I worry about how much intangible element has been lost.
Mm.
And this will come up when we have discussions down the road about Yadier Molina, who had, the reputation for phenomenal intangibles. And some of the guys you're mentioning obviously did have those intangibles, but didn't get recognized for it.
Yeah, I mean, and
imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you look at, so what I ran into here, like CC Sabathia, I don't think there's any question, right? There really is. I mean, he was one of the best pitchers of his generation, durable, long, champion, highly decorated, ambassador to the game, all that stuff. A lot of strikeouts, stands out among the best lefties in both counting numbers, beyond wins, but also rates and all that stuff. I mean, his best 10 years, when you look at it, just a decade as a starter in the majors, he went 161-86, had a 3.34 ERA, pitched 2,200 innings. So, averaged more than 200 innings a season, and was, when you use ERA plus, which normalizes everything and takes into account the ballpark, he was 30% better than his peers. Just a month. I mean, that's really elite. and had a 447 wins above replacement. That's just carving out like a decade, right? Well, when I did that and looked at it for some of the other starters on the ballot, you start to think like, man, you know, he's not alone in that. And where do you draw the line? Because like, if you look at Burley, CeCe, and Andy Pettitte, strong total, like lots of career, right? They obviously pitched more than a decade. They had longevity. They had durability. They had a lot going on. You know, Burley had the long streak of 200 consecutive of seasons with at least 200 innings. How he got outs was different than other guys, right? He would let them, you know, get meet contact. He would rely on his defense. But the fact of the matter was he was still getting outs. And then you throw in there, right there on the ballot, there's Felix Hernandez, who was a comet streaking through the night. And you think of just his peak years, and he had some of the best years going. I mean, you talk about like the elite pitchers of that era, right? It's Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw, and locally Adam Wainwright had those standout years where he's running in the Cy Young. I don't think you get very far down the list, and you may not get, you know, 2-3 down the list when you think of that era and go, man, Felix Hernandez had some of the most dominant years. Zach Greinke had some of the most dominant years. But did he have enough of those? And how many do you need to be a Hall of Famer, Jeff? Do you think a decade of dominance or a decade of excellence is enough these days, and or maybe has always been enough?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think if you're at a very high level, if you're elite, and you're talking about King Felix here, then I think 10 years is plenty if you're at that level. If that is your hallmark, because one, careers aren't going to last forever as much as they used to. Anyways, it's just the nature of the business. There are going to be some guys that do play forever, like Adam Wainwright, but there's also going to be shorter careers. Guys that pitch at a high level, and in a case of, you know, King Felix, you're pitching on, you know, a bit off Broadway in a sense. You don't have the postseason of an Andy Pettitte. You don't have that October, you know, sunshine, the bright lights, and all the attention you get there.
Yeah,
as much as other guys. But yeah, when you're just one of the best pitchers or one of the best players at your position, particularly if you play a premium position, you're a starting pitcher or you play a premium position, and you have a decade where you're clearly one of the very best, then I think that's sufficient. I don't know that, you know, I'm an out longevity guy. Another background for me, my favorite player growing up, Al Kaline. Al Kaline had one dominant year, his first year. After that, he was a good player who played forever. And he put up just enough counting numbers at the end of his career as a DH to make sure he was in the Hall of Fame. And it wasn't pretty at the end. A whole nother issue for some of the people you want to vote on. But it was just, you know, but he was a very good player. He was only 1 year was he a dominant player. Well, now you're talking about a guy like King Felix. There are years where, you know, he's one of the 2-3 guys you would pick to put on in your rotation in the whole game.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You carve up his 10 best years and just further like compare with what I mentioned with CeCe earlier. You know, CeCe over that 10 best years had a 47 WAR. Felix over his 10 best years, 47.2. CeCe over his 10 best years, 30% better than his peers. Felix Hernandez in his 10 best years, 2,100 inning pitches. So again, averaging more than 200 innings, a 3.06 ERA. And when normalized for ballpark factors and all that stuff, 29% better than his peers. So right there, alongside CeCe, just CeCe did it more. He accumulated more counting stats. The Hall does require, Jeff, that a player have 10 years in the majors to qualify for the ballot. So I do kind of think that like 10 is a number that even in our instructions with the ballot is kind of set aside. Where it gets tricky is, what if 7 of those 10 years are amazing? What if for 7 years you're talking about a guy who is one of the best players in the game? How do you look at that? Is that then too short? Is the sweet spot somewhere in between? Or do you just follow the ballot and say, all right, 10 is 10, and let's start with 10?
Well, were there mitigating circumstances? You know, we always have to look. Did somebody get hurt, or was there some reason why somebody fell off? You know, like King Felix, you know, he lost his fastball, and that was that, right? He just couldn't, you know, where other pitchers were able to keep going and find ways to win, you know, he didn't. And that's going to happen increasingly with pitchers. This will be a huge issue going forward. You may get a guy who could have a a dominant pitcher. Could think of one on the Pirates right now. Mm-hmm. He may get to year 7 or 8 and run out of arm because of the way the game is played now. So yeah. It was interesting. If there are no mitigating circumstances, then, yeah, it gets murky if that sustained excellence. But then again, if you're talking 7 years and he's got 2 or 3 MVPs in there or Cy Young Awards, you know, what do you do?
Does it – how do you look at that with the second base? Because it gets back to that similar question of, like, peak years, injuries slowed, longevity, right? Three second basemen who all have – to varying degrees, you could line them up and say they have pretty similar careers were on this ballot. There is, of course, Chase Utley, the great Philadelphia Phillies player. There's Dustin Pedroia, the highly decorated and championship second baseman there for the Boston Red Sox, who hit lasers. And then there's the Mizzou made Ian Kinsler, who faced against the Cardinals in the 2011 World Series while he was with Texas. But he's played other places and is involved with the Mizzou baseball program now. How do you differentiate those three, Jeff? And do you think, like, one stood out to you just because one of them's an MVP and one of them has arguably the better career and then one of them has longevity?
Well, you know, you get a guy like Pedroia when at the very best, you know.
Remarkable.
Yeah, right. So, and then you got, you know, he's an East Coast guy, right? He's East Coast. Getting all the attention that he does. So he obviously has had quite a bit of exposure to the, but this should not matter to the voters, obviously. If this was a fan situation, yeah, you know, the fact that the high note was so high and it's also in a real marquee situation, for sure. So yeah, interesting. That is an interesting case because again, when you're at the very best, you have that, you know, maybe 2-3 years and one in particular where you're just it. And then you look, okay, then what happened after that? What happened to your career? And, mm-hmm. and where does that fit? I would still want guys that were great and versus the guys that were just really good for a long time if I had to pick between the two. Just because greatness is so hard to achieve. And the guys that truly dominate, unless it was just a fluke year, then if it wasn't a fluke year and you reach that very high level, that's where it gets interesting for me.
Yeah, Utley had, you know, I didn't pluck that 7-year span out of thin air. Utley, for a 7-year period, was second in the majors as far as wins above replacement to Albert Pujols. And, you know, if Ichiro isn't the first 100% Hall of Fame position player, got to imagine that Albert, with 700 home runs and 3 MVPs, he's got a shot at it, again, unless Ichiro gets there first. But one of the things that, like, was interesting to me is, like, Pedroia had a great career, but just quite short. Like, his best years are just short. And then you line it up with Ian Kinsler, you know, almost 2,000 hits, quite literally almost 2,000 hits. I think he had 1,999. So it's almost the Dale Murphy thing, right? Like, what's the difference, you know, between the nice round number versus, you know, just being one or two short shy of that number. But it became difficult for me to differentiate. And there is some irony there, Jeff, is the fact that, you know, those two just cannot get out of their way when it comes to their career. Because, of course, Ian Kinsler ended up at Mizzou because Dustin Pedroia took his position at Arizona State. So they go back a bit. All right, so Jeff, just to recap real quick. All right, so I had 10 spots on the ballot. It's limited. It's not great. I've talked about the binary ballot before. That'd be great if we just had the chance to answer the question that the Hall of Fame asked us, which is this player worthy? Instead, each year, the Hall of Fame asks the eligible voters, is this player one of the 10 most worthy on this ballot? Those are different questions, but here are the 10 that I voted for. Abreu, Beltran, Burley, Hernandez, Andrew Jones, Pettit, Sabathia, Ichiro, Utley, and Billy Wagner. Any questions just to kind of conclude the conversation before we get to the Cardinals? Any other things stand out about that ballot to you? Any concerns you have? Anything you want to skewer me about?
No. Actually, I like the ballot, and I appreciate the ongoing support for Carlos Beltran. I hope this is the year he gets in. As Ben Fred would know from our discussions over the years, I'm a little soft on cheating, and a big fan of Beltran. I mean, so – I think he served his punishment, and I think he deserves it. What a classy guy. What a classy player. I understand the animosity toward what happened, but still, I'm all in on him, and I'm also pulling for Billy Wagner. It's, you know, he's going to get in. These are good choices. Excited to see their names pop up, and hopefully we'll see both of them in Cooperstown.
I'm real hesitant with Carlos Beltran and the whole Astros sign-stealing, tub-thumping gate, because he was the one retired player. So naturally, he was the one player singled out. You know, the union obviously was very protective of active players. And when one player is signaled out and the others are protected, that always catches my ear. All right, let's get to the 2025. It's the Cardinals. It's the start of the 2025 year. This is going to be a year unlike any they've had in many. We'll see what the results bring, considering the past 3 years have brought the elation of the chase for 700 and a brief playoff appearance for what was a pretty good team until they ran into the Phillies. Then, of course, the first losing season of the Mozeliak tenure. And then this past year, which was just basically kind of idling along. Now we've got the end of the Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado era. They had exactly the same amount of MVPs won as they had playoff games won. As a tandem, Goldschmidt goes off to the Yankees. The Cardinals are still searching for a trade for Nolan Arenado, with few teams remaining who are actual fits. But one real big domino yet to fall in Alex Bregman, speaking of the Houston Astros and that 2017. So once he signs, it sure seems like we'll have clarity on whether or not Nolan Arenado is a Cardinal or headed elsewhere. Possibly Boston, for example, would be a team in the mix there. So, Jeff, what are some 2025 resolutions for the Cardinals? What are some things that they need to do in the coming year and you'd like to see?
Well, one, I would have them resolve not to overexpose or overly challenge some of the young pitching they have. They have some interesting guys for sure, and there are guys making progress, but protect yourself. Resolve to protect yourself. Don't push those guys too far. I'm all in about playing Jordan Walker, Nolan Gorman. Play those guys. Maybe they won't turn out like Mason Winn and just be that consistent player that that Mason's become, but just play them, see what happens. As far as young pitching goes, my resolution is for these guys to resolve to be careful with that, because you don't want to ruin guys. For years and years and years, the Kansas City Royals ran out guys and kind of blew them up. The Pirates ran out guys, kind of blew them up. Now the Royals are in a better place. Pirates are still where they are with one great exception. So just be careful.
That's a great point that, like, if they don't supplement – you know, and they have kind of by circumstance already supplemented, right? Like Sonny Gray's wish to remain with the Cardinals. You know, now does a team come in, make an overture that the Cardinals can't ignore for Sonny Gray, and they go to him and say, would you accept this? That's still possible here. We'll see what, for example, the Atlanta Braves do with Max Fried no longer in their rotation and what they look for. But, you know, it's a great point you make that, like, Michaelis, Fetty, Gray, you know, these guys returning are really, they could be very important to development in the sense that they create a bedrock upon which to build a rotation so that you're not like at a spot where you're like, oh my gosh, well, we need to get six innings out of Michael McGreevy today because the bullpen is tattered, because the bullpen is exhausted, and that might set him back. Not to say that one game sets a guy back, but doing that repeatedly, having to extend young pitchers who are facing some turbulent games just to cover the innings. That's a bad recipe for development, or it has been in the past. I don't see that changing. So you make a great point. Like, do you think then, like, adding a veteran pitcher or adding a lottery ticket, a guy who could have a bounce back year, that would be valuable? I'm thinking, you know, certainly the veteran pitcher that stands out is Gibson, who would bring some balance to the force, so to speak. But adding just even like someone who might like have an upside, would that be beneficial?
Sure. The old, NRI, there's going to be a couple of those guys you could bring in and take a good look at in the spring, just to make sure you're buying time. While you're hoping to God that your new performance team can figure out how to, say, keep Tink Hentz on the mound for more than, you know, 60, 70 innings a year.
Yeah.
With some of the other fragile guys like Roby as well as he comes up. Yeah, just bring some veterans in, take a look, and know that early in the season there may be a need. And there are going to be guys that when the music stops, there's going to be guys standing with no chair.
What do you think the Cardinals ought to resolve when it comes to their relationship with fans? You know, the fans are irritated, and they're ticket sales are soft. The Cardinals are braced for a real dip in both ticket sales and attendance. They know that's coming. They know that that's a message being sent by fans. They are suggesting that maybe they can sell the fans on growing with a team. This is a team that has put stars on the field, put all-stars on the field, put MVPs on the field, gone out and sought significant standout name brand hitters. What do you think they need to do for their fans to suggest, all right, this is a different direction, but still appeal to the fans?
Yeah, good challenge, right? I mean, they're going to have to believe. And the challenge you have is the guys you would like to be able to sell beyond Mason Winn, who's now the face of the franchise. Mm-hmm. If Walker and Nolan Gorman can't play, if they can't get there, if they can't become the guys you hope they are, it's going to be tough, because, J.J. Weatherholt, nice prospect. By the end of the year, you might see him. But for the first time in forever, you're trying to sell hope. And you need those guys to play. You need to play an aggressive game. And I would let the next guy talk. I wouldn't rush Bloom out of the rush him out of the news conference when you're announcing what you're doing. I would let this guy talk on a regular basis about what's happening, because he's going to have to be the guy that sells hope to the fans. He's got to be a better at messaging than John Mozeliak. That was not a strong suit for Mo, not a strong suit for Bill DeWitt III either. They need a good front man besides Ollie Marmol who can explain what's going on here, and that's what you're left with, because really there's no way around it. You get some sort of a Wilson Contreras dish rag night. That's not going to bring people back in, right? You're going to have to give them some idea that this thing has direction, and it does. And you have to let the guy who's going to bring that direction express it on and on again during the course of the season. And yeah, maybe show some highlights of what's going on in Springfield and Memphis.
Do the farm report on the scoreboard. Yes, that's something the Pittsburgh Pirates do. Haven't really seen that a whole lot on the Cardinals. But, if Victor Scott II takes over in center and starts to steal bases at a clip in the majors, close to what he did in the minors, they have to do a Victor Scott II oven mitt night. One of those protective sleeves or protective gloves that the base stealers signed. They have to do one of those and say, let them cook. You've been here in St. Louis for a while. What do you think the chances are that this is a fan base that buys into hope, as you so well put it?
Yeah, there's going to be they will to a degree. I think you're going to find out where the floor is on your attendance base. And the question is, can you ever get it back to when people in the stands on a Tuesday night? That's going to be the trickier, because it's going to take heavy discounting, a lot of work, And a lot of things have to happen quickly. And if the key young guys don't develop, then there's not much the marketing department can do. The fan base, let it spoil, that's unfair. They've had a good product, and a very good product, very consistent product. The product's not as good, they're consumers. And it's not our position to tell them to go support the team. It's not good.
All right, we began by talking about the Hall of Fame ballot. Let's close real quickly here by talking about the Hall of Fame. One of the more interesting elements of Cardinal history is this continuity of Hall of Famers that stretches back to Roger Bresnahan. You got more than 100 years where the Cardinals have been able to boast that they have a Hall of Famer in uniform. Carlos Beltran is on this year's ballot. If he gets voted in, that extends that. You figure Albert Pujols, right, leaves in 2011, returns in 2022. Carlos Beltran had the couple years there with the Cardinals. All through that time, Yadier Molina extended it. Then you got Adam Wainwright, possibly Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado. Now, if all those players, Jeff, are no longer on this team, Goldschmidt's a Yankee, Adam Wainwright's retired, Yadier Molina is a manager in the Dominican Winter League. Nolan Arenado, if he's not with this team, how does that continue? Are the Cardinals really at risk of not having a Hall of Fame level player? And will we look back in hindsight as this is the time when that century ended?
Are we going back to more of a Stan Royer type of a level of talent base with this team? Can you see these guys that potential? It's just so unfair to put that action. I think, Mason Winn can be Francisco Lindor, perhaps. That's probably not Hall of Fame, right? So Can you get that guy? Can you draft a guy at 7, Weatherholt, and he become that guy? Can you draft a guy at 5 in the next draft? Can he become that guy? Oh, these are good questions. And can you go back to Latin America again and ever find who could be of that caliber, which has not happened in a long time?
That is Jeff Gordon, columnist at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and SCLToday.com. You know him as Instant Offense and the author of The Chip Sheet. And this year in 2025, he's going to be a regular appearer. That's not a word. He's going to make regular appearances here on the best podcast in baseball. The best podcast in baseball is available wherever you get your podcast. Get it on Spotify, get it on iTunes. Please rate and review the podcast so that we know what direction to go for the listeners. This has really been a community that's developed around this podcast, and we're entering year 13. Can you believe that, Jeff? Year 13 of this podcast? It's crazy.
That's why it's the best.
You can also find all of Jeff's work there at stltoday.com and all of the constant Cardinals coverage and some of the new things that we have planned. You can also catch the debut of our new columnist, baseball writer over the last few years, working the Cardinal beat with me, now moving up in the world to columnist, was Lynn Worthy, will make his debut here in January as the general sports columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, joining Benjamin Hockman and Jeff Gordon. The best podcast in baseball brought to you by Closet by Design. You can find it here weekly here through 2025. Jeff and I will be doing stuff regularly. We'll also be doing a video, and I'm eager to see where this goes. Jeff, thank you so much. I know you got a chat to get to as well. Thank you so much for doing this. I look forward to talking to you regularly this season. No, I did say he had a chat to get to, so Jeff is off chatting.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.